You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 18th, 2016, at episode number 286. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. An interesting week in the paranormal, if you've been paying attention. Some really weird stories out there. And we're going to cover a couple of them, not all of them. We only have an hour, folks. We're going to talk about the rare river dolphin sighting in China. The ABCs having 1, 2, and 3s in the UK. What does that mean? Well, you'll find out. Petals has been taken. And a possible white lion in Texas. And get ready for Wessie Fest. And Cape Crusader steps up to the clown pandemic. What in the world is that all about? And Morgana strikes again. Uh-oh. We'll also have the book of the week. Maybe some time for conferences and conventions. And a whole lot more tonight on the Paranormal News Insider. And it's brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum now at 4 Thompson's Point Road, Suite 106, and it's bigger than ever. For more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. cryptozoologymuseum.com. And yes, it's baseball season. It's baseball season. It's the end of October. Well, it's the middle of October. Closer to the end. And it's baseball season. Why am I saying that? Because I'm bringing you the show live tonight in game 5, or I should say game 4 of the Indians Blue Jays game. I had to walk away from that. Good thing too, because they're getting beat pretty bad. 5-1 right now. In the top of the ninth inning. It doesn't look like Cleveland's going to sweep it tonight, which is great because I'd hate to miss that party. But I would have, just to bring you this show tonight. But it looks like they're going to lose that game 5-1, at least right now. Cleveland's batting at the top of the ninth, so they got 3 outs left. And then later on tonight, the Cubs and Dodgers take on each other. That series is tied at 1, so game 3 tonight at 8 o'clock. Weird to hear your sports during the Paranormal News Insider. But I'm excited about this to see the Indians back in the World Series. They got to win one more game. And after tonight's loss, they'll still have 3 more chances to win one game. I'm excited about that. And one thing I got to remember to tell you, because I know I'll forget. If I don't write things down, I tend to forget them pretty quickly. Next week, I'm taking a week off. I need a break. So next week, Paranormal News Insider will not be live. I probably won't even. I was thinking of doing some sort of little fun little thing for Halloween, but I'm not going to do that. I need a little time off. I got some events I'm trying to plan to come up with, trying to finish my presentations. I got a really long one at Westerville Public Library coming up on October 27th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:45. That's a long night. I'm going to need a nap after that one. Really looking forward to that down there in Westerville. It's going to be the 8th consecutive year I've gone down there to speak at that library. And I've already been there once this year, talking on cryptozoology earlier this year. It was a lot of fun. And I look forward to this. This is going to be a ghost presentation, which I've done the last 7 Octobers. So really looking forward to getting back there and meeting those great folks down there in the Westerville area, which is northeast of Columbus, Ohio, the state capital. It's one of the best libraries in not only Ohio, but one of the top ranked in the United States. Great. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm excited about that. I get excited about that one. I haven't really talked about ghosts in quite a while. So that's going to be great to get back to the roots and talk about ghosts. And speaking of ghosts, I'll also be speaking at the third Ghost Excavation Conference, November 4th through the 6th in Bedford, Pennsylvania. So a little bit of E4 method stuff there. So we'll probably talk about that a little bit here on this program as well. Heck, who knows? Maybe my book will make it the book of the week. Find out. See if I can make that happen. And if you listen to the show live tonight and you heard before the show started, there's a little promo about the AlienCon 2016. Now, if you didn't get to hear that, I'm going to repeat a little bit of that information. The Alien Convention takes place October 28th through the 30th in Santa Clara, California, which is in the San Francisco area, a little bit to the south there, the Bay Area, and north of San Jose. Lots of guests in that event, just a lot of TV people, Ancient Aliens, some of the original people that were in Lost in Space series. Yeah, Will Robinson, Penny Robinson. Wow. Lots of great guests. Edward James Olmos. I'm excited about him. I really like him from Blade Runner, Battlestar Galactica, the remake of Battlestar Galactica. Not the original one. That, to me, is the best, but also of Miami Vice fame. And why am I talking about that? What's the big deal? Don't I normally talk about conventions that I'm going to be at first and then just the regular ones at the end of the show? No. Well, WCJV is going to be a part of this event. The station that hosts my show, we're going to be a part of that. We're going to be bringing you live interviews all weekend long for that. Again, October 28th through the 30th. Listen here on WCJVradio.com. Follow us on Facebook to get all the information about what's coming when. It's going to be really interesting. And yeah, and if you're in California, don't forget to check it out. AlienCon 2016 at thealiencon.com. And I mentioned we'll be back on November 1st. I'm taking next week off. So next Tuesday, I won't be live. Following Tuesday, I'll be back. But the biggest news of that week, Frank Lee. Remember that guy? He's going to be returning Halloween night, Monday, October 31st at 9 p.m. Eastern. Special comeback Halloween show. It's going to have a bunch of guests on. That's going to be fun. And enough of all that stuff. Good grief. Isn't there news here? Yes, there is news here. Cryptid news. Let's get into that. Quite a few stories this week. Actually, a couple I had to cut because I didn't want to do like a whole entire episode here of cryptid news, but some interesting stuff going on. The Chinese river dolphin. You heard about this guy? Talked about this in other episodes year after year. The Chinese river dolphin, still holding out hope that this poor little guy can make a comeback and still be alive. It's also known as the white dolphin, the Yangtze river dolphin, or also known as the Baiji dolphin. Lived in the Yangtze River in China with the last legitimate sighting occurring back in 2004. In 2006, scientists searched for 6 weeks for signs of the dolphin with no luck, and it was ultimately declared functionally extinct since numbers had been dwindling for years. In the 1950s, there were 6,000 estimated Chinese river dolphins, but the number quickly slipped to 400 by the 1980s, and then 13 when a scientific search was conducted in 1997. Now, functionally extinct does not mean it's been declared extinct. Just in the case of the Baiji dolphin, there's probably not enough alive to maintain the species going forward through natural breeding. Dolphins appeared in the fossil record about 25 million years ago and migrated to the Yangtze River about 20 million years ago. Due to heavy fishing, pollution, as well as the use of hydroelectricity, the former 1,100 miles of habitat for the freshwater dolphin has virtually disappeared. According to Wikipedia, quote, approximately 12% of the world's human population lives and works within the Yangtze River catchment area, putting pressure on the river. The construction of the Three Gorges Dam, along with other smaller damming projects, also led to habitat loss, unquote. Now, a captive specimen lived for over 22 years before dying in 2002. If extinct, it would be the first dolphin species driven to extinction by humans. How sad is that? However, a recent expedition by amateur Chinese conservationists claimed that they witnessed at least one river dolphin jumping out of the water. Yeah, I'm not going to get too carried away about that, but that's very, very good news. According to Song Ki, the leader of the expedition, quote, "I saw most of the body, and the second time around I saw its mouth and head. The front boat saw it three times," unquote. Unfortunately, attempts to get photographs or other type of evidence failed, leaving some to be skeptical about the sighting. Samuel Turvey, senior research fellow at the Institute of Zoology, Zoological Society of London, who has also written a book about the Baiji's extinction, said, quote, "Extreme claims for the possible survival of probable extinct species requires robust proof. And while I would deeply love there to be strong evidence that the Baiji is not extinct, this isn't it. Ecologically, the question is, if this is a Baiji, where has the species been hiding for the past decade?" Unquote. Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Samuel, but it's a big river, 1,100 miles. It's pretty wide. I mean, you've done the research, Samuel. You know you wrote the book on it. But I think, to quote Jurassic Park, life finds a way. And I think that these animals have learned how to deal with humans in their area, and I think they've learned kind of how to keep away from them, if they're smart. So I don't know. I'm not going to hold out, but it still doesn't mean that the species is geared toward complete recovery or recovery at all. It still could be dwindling toward extinction. And the one good part about this scientific survey is they also picked up some sonar data, which is currently being researched. That could provide some additional details of the size of what they saw and could possibly prove that this is actually the Baiji dolphin. Holding out hope for that guy. So what else is going on? Alien big cats. Alien big cats. Are they breeding in the wild? That's the latest question asked. And Jonathan Downs, head of the Center for Fortean Zoology, thinks they are. Alien big cats, or ABCs, are what big cat sightings are called in the United Kingdom and other locations that do not have a population of large wild cats, such as African lions, mountain lions, leopards, jaguars, and others. Downs commented on the fact that Wales, England, and Northern Ireland have logged 455 big cat sightings between 2010 and 2015. Downs said, quote, "Since the Dangerous Wild Animals Act, which came into law in 1977, people have not been allowed to keep big cats as pets. Many big cat sightings are of animals that were kept as pets and released, or they may be ones that escaped from zoos or were purposely let out into the wild. I'm certain that big cats such as leopards and pumas must be breeding, as they do not live 40 years in the wild. Also, there have been occasional sightings of females with cubs," unquote. Well, not all of these sightings are definitely large wild cats. As I've talked about before, people make horrible witnesses. And sometimes we see something walking through the grass and we think it's a mountain lion and we think it's a tiger and we think it's this or think it's that. It turns out just to be a house cat. It's happened more often than not. I've talked about those plenty of times just this year here on the show. But there has been some physical evidence gathered from cases in and around England, such as farm animal attacks, that have provided some DNA that definitely points in the direction of leopards or other large cats that definitely should not be in the United Kingdom. Does that prove that they're breeding? Maybe. Maybe. Until you see a large spike, I really don't know how much we can say that these animals are definitely breeding in the wild on their own. You'd have to see a lot of animals kind of gathering in certain areas, but again, like I mentioned with the Baiji dolphin, do those species have enough to maintain an ongoing population? It would take a lot of large cats, a lot of mountain lions or leopards or whatever they are, of the same species to continuously grow as a population without inbreeding problems, which does create some diseases that would limit them from continuing on. So it would take quite a few cats of the same species. I'm not sure that that's really happening out there, but something is happening 40 years in the wild, not going to happen, especially out there. And as for Downs, pointed out, it's highly unlikely that these are older cats that have been surviving, you know, for decades. They don't survive in that landscape probably for too long without being seen, hunted, or otherwise. Yeah, well, here's a sad story. You got to talk about it, though. It's kind of sad, but it's I don't know. I'm kind of in the middle of this, just like I usually am with a lot of other stories. But we'll talk about it as it is sad news. This week, October 10th through October 15th, which I guess was last week, New Jersey's black bear hunting season for bows and muzzleloaders took place, and a total of 549 bears were taken by and reported by the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife. And sadly, among them was an icon of an ongoing story covered here and elsewhere in the paranormal world. Petals, the upright walking bear, took the internet by storm in 2014 when a YouTube video showed him walking upright through a housing development. If you remember seeing that, it was quite spooky and kind of weird and kind of cool. The first thing I thought of was people thinking they saw Bigfoot. But people saw this and instantly recognized it as a bear, which I thought was great. Now, once confirmed to be an injured bear, there was a huge debate online whether Petals should be euthanized or relocated. Now, euthanized because it obviously couldn't walk, and an animal that can't walk is going to have trouble eating, trouble drinking, trouble surviving in general. A GoFundMe campaign took place last year and raised over $20,000 for the relocation of Petals to the Orphaned Wildlife Center in Otisville, New York. It was discovered that Petals was actually missing his right front paw and had injured the left severely, more than likely in a car accident. Not that Petals was driving, just, he wasn't careful crossing the road somewhere. It is New Jersey. However, New Jersey would not approve the move and apparently wanted nature to run its course. That's another point of debate. A lot of people were going back and forth about that. I mean, what do you do in that situation? Well, a hunter who had waited for 3 years to kill Petals apparently got his wish. According to the Facebook page that covers Petals, two biologists were on hand to examine the bear, and upon inspection of paws, determined that this was the bear, more than likely, since it had spent a considerable time walking upright. Although they did say that there were a couple of bears that were collected, especially from the same station where Petals was purportedly found, that also had front paws that were damaged, although they had obviously been walking fairly recently on their front paws. So this other one that had hardly any wear and tear on the front paw, the one paw remaining, more than likely Petals. So while this is sad, it does provide some closure for the bear and for this story, which is, it is kind of a thing. I mean, he was more than likely suffering through this condition. I mean, lost a paw and survived, having to walk upright, very difficult to eat, very difficult to drink and survive the winter with a lot less fat. And we should set our emotions aside when it comes to things like this, even though it's really hard to do. And for me, it's a little unnerving that somebody would purposely go after this injured bear. I mean, it's kind of unmanly, I think, to stalk an injured animal instead of taking ones that are a little bit more of a challenge. But I guess that's just how some people are. But again, Petals was more than likely suffering and would quite possibly not survive another winter. Although that was a kind of an argument going on about this. And a lot of people were upset about that Petals was taken. But, you know, if Mother Nature took him, then you know, New Jersey would probably get the blame. And even if they did rescue Petals and put him into a little bear orphanage, who knows? Who knows if he would have survived that either? And a video in Texas shows a mysterious white figure moving across farmland. Is this a chupacabra? No chupacabra. What is it then? Well, that's the question and debate underway as everyone weighs in on what was captured on video last November. Mitchell Cox used his cell phone to record a large white cat-like creature that appears to be an albino mountain lion. kind of sort of does. If you see the video, I'm still not sure. I don't want to put my bets down on that, but it did look very close to a mountain lion with the tail and the long body. The creature jumped across a 6-foot creek cleanly to the other side. Some biologists feel that it's, well, here we go again, just a large house cat, since the sighting occurred during the day, which confused me when they said that, because I'm a pretty decent researcher, I'd guess, on a lot of topics, and mountain lions are one of my favorite topics. Not a huge cat person, but I love mountain lions. But they're not nocturnal. To say that they don't go during the day is ridiculous. They do show crepuscular tendencies of hunting. And crepuscular means the animal is active during dawn and dusk, just kind of like deer. You know, you see a lot of deer very early in the morning and in the afternoon. Yes, they are also active in the middle of the day. I've seen deer walking around at high noon. So animals like that, you can't just say that they're nocturnal. Now, Cox initially thought it was a dog and states that it's far too large to be a house cat. So what is it? Well, in 2011, a white puma, or mountain lion, was born at the Attica Zoological Park in Greece, and other white mountain lions have been spotted historically. Now, I know what you're thinking. Everyone's thinking the same thing. I read your minds. The Black Panther. While the Black Panther seems to get the headlines, at least the white version is actually possible. Despite numerous claims, melanistic or black mountain lions have never been observed in the wild or in captivity, and biologists feel that this would never happen in nature. Black panthers are essentially leopards that live in Europe and Africa, and jaguars, which occupy the Americas. Despite appearing completely black, these cats still have their patterns. With this new possible white lion roaming Texas, well, you know, talking about petals here, my fear is that now hunters will go crazy and find this cat. And despite hunters of old respecting these rare creatures, it seems now that money and ego will limit this cat's life. That's not a dig at hunters. I know quite a few hunters, and most of them are respectable toward animals, but it only takes one nut in a jar to kind of spoil everything. And I've talked to a lot of hunters, especially in Pennsylvania, about albino animals, and they will not kill an albino deer. It's kind of taboo. It's bad luck to some people, which I always find that interesting. They are glorious creatures. I've seen a couple of white deer. They weren't true albinos, but just really majestic to look at. And you have to think that they have kind of a disadvantage anyway. Not that deer have any natural predators, but I don't know, for hunters to see them pretty well, except in wintertime, I guess they would blend in pretty well. But we'll find out if more information appears about this strange Texas wildcat. Hopefully we'll find out about it. Again, November. It's quite a long time for a cat to be around. And, you know, somebody's going to want this hanging on their wall. Unfortunately, that's just kind of how things are. Saturday, October 22nd. If you're not doing anything this Saturday, you might want to drive up to Westbrook, Maine. Westbrook, Maine. That sounds familiar, right? Well, that's because I've talked about it ever since the end of June. What's that you mean? The Wessie Fest. Wessie, the snake. Come on, guys. You know this stuff. Wessie will have his own celebration all weekend long, and it's going to include an event called, I love this one. This is my favorite. The, quote, Wessie Pie-thon, unquote. It's a pie-baking contest. You get it? Wessie Pie-thon? Python? Play on words? Okay, you got it. Somebody got it out. That's great. Also going to have the Wessie Toss Cornhole event. So that's going to be fun. I might enter that one. A sidewalk parade. Pretty cool. Photos with a live snake. Not going to be Wessie, although I've heard he may make an appearance. We don't know. Crafts and vendors. That will also include the International Cryptozoology Museum, headed by Lauren Coleman. Bill Brock of the television show Monsters Underground will have a presentation at 2 p.m., followed by a Wessie hunt at 3 p.m. Not sure how serious they're going to take that, But it sounds like a great time. I don't think I'll be able to make it out there. Unfortunately, I have to work this weekend, but it sounds great. Sounds like a good time. And it's great that they're going to celebrate that. I mean, the city's kind of gotten a lot of great attention over this large snake that's supposedly 10 feet long with a head the size of a soccer ball, as goes the story. And creeping around the Presumpscot River up there in Westbrook, Maine. Nobody really ever truly saw this thing. A few stories about people supposedly seeing it, but nothing confirmed since the police saw it late night back in the middle of, what was that, August? So it's been quite a while. And now the weather's a little colder, and more than likely, I hate to say it, but I don't think he's going to make the Wessie Python baking contest this year. Yeah, the weather is just, they don't survive very well in cold weather. We've had a few days here already. We've had frost warnings a couple of times here in Northeast Ohio. And I know its temperatures gotten down into the low 30s, just slightly above freezing. And it's a little colder up there in Maine. So I kind of imagine that if Wessie hasn't dug a hole and hid pretty well, he's pretty much dead at this point. Got to say it, got to call it out. But we're going to honor Wessie that weekend, this coming weekend. It's going to be a great time. And I want to let you know you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And that was a perfect segue into our UFO news. Now, I'm not going to bring you the story that you think I'm going to bring you. You think I'm going to talk about it, but I'm not going to talk about it. Why am I not going to talk about it? Well, let me talk about it and explain why I'm not going to talk about it. I know it doesn't make any sense. I kind of went back and forth about this story. I've actually seen this develop since July, and kind of a little personal story to me because of somebody else that was involved in this, not directly involved with this particular case, but somebody who actually passed away just prior to this was actually lumped into this particular story. Now, I do want to mention that I do take the time to look at a majority of the stories that pop up on the paranormal and regular news sites that have ties to the paranormal. It's my job. It's what I do. I bring you guys the news every week, and I do the best I can to report on them and bring you the truth. Now, the one I choose to report are the ones that there's enough information to provide information beyond what the average person picks up through social media and news sites. Sometimes they tell you what to think. And a lot of the times, the stuff that they're telling you is only part of the story. So it's my job to dig in there and bring you the truth, bring you the information that you're missing from the inside, because I've been a researcher and investigator for over 20 years now. I've written some books. I've been a part of organizations that are bigger than me, that I've learned from a lot of other people how to spot certain things that we're talking about here in the news. And sometimes stories just don't have enough information to get a clear enough picture to even speculate in a particular direction beyond what's being reported by others who probably have just as much information as anyone, but they're just writing a story. Now, I say all of this in the anticipated response as to why I'm not going to cover the Max Spires story. You probably know about this. Max, of course, he died back on July 16th of this year under mysterious circumstances, and conspiracy theories were flying back then that he was killed for his knowledge of UFO conspiracies. But now, right now, they're in high gear due to some statements that was made by his mother. Now, it seems to me that many are making a bigger deal about what might have happened versus getting to the reality of what did happen. But again, everything is speculation at this point. That's why it's not even worth talking beyond what I just mentioned. I would speculate that there are people who were close to him at the time that may have information about what happened, but since it doesn't support his cause or theirs, they won't come forward with it. It also seems to me that when or if the truth comes out, it won't be as dramatic as what people wanted, and his followers will still cling to the conspiracy theories. It might not be a big deal to some people, but I kind of have a sense of journalistic integrity when covering the news, and things like this may sound great to talk about and stir up a lot of thoughts of dark secrets, but the fact here is a man died, and nobody really knows how or what happened leading up to that. And just despite what he does in his spare time, we're missing out on a whole large chunk of this person's life. And nobody really has those pieces to put together. And if they do, no one's really mentioned yet. It hasn't come public. So I guess to stir the pot really does no one any good other than those that hold the spoon. That's my thought of the day here, or the thought of the week here on the those kind of stories. Nothing really I can add to that. It's all speculation. And people are kind of throwing things in there and making it worse and talking about things that might not even happen. It's hearsay about black stuff coming out of this person's mouth. And nobody saw that. Somebody just claimed that somebody else saw that. There's no name attached to that. So there's a lot of speculation and people just running rampant with that speculation and posting it on websites for click-throughs and things like that. But that's really all I have to say on that. We're going to jump to other news. We're going to talk some Cape Crusaders here. Talked about that at the beginning of the show. What is going on? Well, the clown situation, as we know, has gone crazy the last few weeks. And it's kind of dying down here in the United States. I'm not really looking into them anymore, unless they're front page news. I'm not digging into those situations. But one has kind of come up very recently that I thought was kind of cool. And the United Kingdom has been really dealing with a lot of crazy clown situations lately, a lot more violent and a little bit more scary than here in the United States. But someone has stepped up to take them on. A hero has emerged that has made children feel safe in Whitehaven in the county of Cumbria in the United Kingdom. The hero in England is none other than Batman. That's right. Batman. Batman's been chasing off clowns and has even joined a team of caped heroes. No, it's not what you're thinking. The Cumbria superheroes. That includes Spider-Man and Captain America. What? Captain America in England. Well, the Cumbria superheroes make frequent appearances at hospitals, birthdays, and other events. And I was hoping to get Batman here in the studio. He does interviews and stuff on radio, and was kind of hoping to get him on here, but he's not going to be able to make it tonight. And sadly, it would be cool to have Batman in studio, but I guess that's not going to happen. But the clown stories continue. Again, I'm not really going to I'm going to have to kind of shy away from keeping a close eye on this coverage. But there's been a couple of more headlines, and some of them, I should say one of them actually ties into a story that I covered last week. So I kind of feel obligated to finish off that story and kind of talk about that. October 13th, a 19-year-old man was stabbed in the shoulder by a man wearing a clown mask. The following day, a woman in Sweden was threatened by a man wearing a clown mask, carrying a knife in a different area in Sweden. Sweden is currently being flooded with clown sightings, with many of them taking a bit of a violent twist to them, as you can tell. Stabbings. That's a little crazy. The Clown Lives Matter. You know, I mentioned that last week, October 14th, Clown Lives Matter March, scheduled for October 15th. Well, it got canceled. It got canceled. Why did it get canceled? It got canceled for concerns of safety. The peaceful walk planned in the streets of Tucson, Arizona, was canceled over numerous death threats and harassments made on the Facebook page promoting the event. Now, that is just disturbing. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, this whole clown sighting stuff, it's bad enough. But to have to cancel a peaceful march over clown sightings, I mean, good grief. I mean, they were just there to, holy cow. Oh my gosh. You would not believe this. Right now, Batman is actually in the studio. He's hiding above my bookcase up here. He's just, oh my gosh, how did you get up here? That is so cool. He's actually above my, my bookcase here for all my paranormal books. He's kind of scaring me now because he's just staring at me and I think my books are about ready to fall. Batman, you might want to come down from there. You can come down and talk. Come on. Come on down. Be careful. This isn't going to turn out good, folks. He's that doesn't look safe. Please be careful. Oh, no. Oh, jeez. Okay, well, you okay?
I'm okay.
I think he's okay. Yeah. You sure? You look like you're limping now.
I'm a trained professional.
Okay, he's a trained professional. I appreciate you coming to the studio, even though you just like tore half my books out of the thing. But Batman, how did you get here so fast? I emailed you this morning to do a radio interview. I didn't expect you to come in here. And how did you get in here, by the way?
I used the front door.
Oh, use the front door. Well, okay, I didn't hear you knock, but that's cool. So how did you get here so fast?
I used the Batcopter.
The Batcopter. I don't think a helicopter can fly that fast. Really don't think that's possible.
I used the invisible jet.
Invisible jet? Does that mean that Wonder Woman's here? Oh, that's too dark. I can't see it. Oh, wait a minute. I see the light on the cockpit. That is her. She's kind of short. She looks weird just sitting there in the middle of the air like that. Let me ask you a question. How do you guys go to the bathroom in the invisible jet?
There's no bathroom.
Well, there's no bathroom on the invisible jet. Now everybody knows. There is no bathroom on the invisible jet. So that mystery is gone. So let me ask you, clowns. Why clowns?
Have you ever heard of the Joker?
Of course I've heard of the Joker, but is he a clown? I think he's a jester. That's a completely different thing. Batman, where are you going? He's looking out the window. You're tearing my blinds, Batman. Oh, wow. What is that in the sky?
That's the bat signal. I gotta go.
Well, Batman's gotta go. He sees the bat signal, and now the lights just went out in the studio. That's great. Let me check. Mic is working. Computer's on. What's going on? Why are you hiding in the corner, Batman? Why are you still standing? I see you in the corner.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. I see you plain as day. I see your ears. I see your little chest plate, the thingies on it. What are you doing?
You see the ears?
Yes, I see the ears.
What about now?
Still see the ears, Batman. You probably want to use the front door.
Okay, I'll use the front door. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I'll tell your listeners I said hello.
Okay, well, Batman's leaving. Okay, yeah, you can have a mellow yellow. That's fine. Go ahead. So anyway, Batman making a jump in here in the studio. Totally sidetracked. That was completely worthless. I mean, it was great, Batman. I appreciate that. Ooh, I think the invisible jet just took out my car. Well, that's great. Well, we'll find out later on here. So we're going to jump into the book of the week this week. Since Halloween is coming up, got to talk ghosts. I mean, got a ghost event coming up, and you got to talk ghosts. So we're going to talk ghosts. And the book of the week this week, it's about ghosts. And it's part of my favorite thing about ghosts. I love reading books about the history of ghosts because I enjoy the history, the culture of where things came from. How did we get where we're getting with ghosts and ghost research and our knowledge of ghosts and folklore and urban legends and all of these things? How do we get there? Well, this book here, Ghosts, Apparitions, and Poltergeists, I know it sounds like a Lloyd Auerbach book, but it's not. Ghost Apparitions and Poltergeists, An Exploration of the Supernatural Through History, is written by Brian Rigi. And this book is 8 years old, 2008 it came out, and I got it for like $2. I know that's probably, I don't know if that's good to say that or not, but I got it at Half Price Books, which I love Half Price Books. You can find a ton of great books, very cheap. I should maybe see if they want to do a sponsorship. I don't know. Maybe they do. Ghost Apparitions and Poltergeists. I mean, 8 years is quite a long time for a ghost book, but there's a lot of fantastic information about the history of ghosts. And like I said, I'm kind of a really like those kind of books. And this goes beyond just the mid 1800s, the age of spiritualism, which is when a lot of people think that that's when belief in ghosts started to take place. Well, it actually goes well before that. And it goes back literally thousands of years. Truly thousands of years. Pliny the Younger had a ghost story back in just a few years AD. I don't know exactly when, but that's almost 1900 years ago. That's quite a long time. The first true ghost story is that old. And that's some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about at my Westerville Public Library event. Some of the history behind some of the earliest ghost sightings and ghost information from well back in history, Greek and Roman times, even. I'll talk about that. And Rigi does that here in his book, Ghost Apparitions and Poltergeists, which I really enjoyed reading a little bit more about that. He does some fantastic research in this book. And he also talks about what ghosts are. And it's kind of weird because that's exactly what I'm going to be doing. He also talks about investigations, a little 101 stuff here, and I kind of don't agree with some of that information, but it is a good book if you're getting to want to know more about the history. Where do we start to believe in ghosts, and how does all that stuff tie into current times? This is a fantastic book to get a hold of, and it also has some forms at the back of the book, which I think is pretty cool. And just a few. They're just really basic ghost hunting forms, paranormal investigation forms, I guess, for client stuff. And a lot of websites and different things. But it's weird because it's dated. 2008. The technology is frozen in time. And some of the approaches and the thought process of what ghosts are and the technology, the, like I said, the approach and everything is kind of frozen in time, because this book was published prior to the big generational thing of ghost television shows. This was published before Ghost Hunters, which came out that fall, 2008. So it's kind of missing some of that. Actually, no, that was 2004. So I guess, yeah, it was out for 4 years, but it seems like a lot of this information is really, really old. There's a lot of people that are in this book commented upon. Dr. Dave Oster, who was huge back in the late 1990s, early aughts, and his work with orbs and EVP, makes quite a few comments in here, and his Ghost Web website is in here. Unfortunately, Dr. Dave passed away earlier this year. But a lot of this information is just – it's just kind of old and stagnant. But I like it for pretty much the first third of the book, maybe the first half of the book, talking about some of the old stuff here. Getting into ghosts, apparitions, poltergeists, what poltergeists are. But unfortunately, poltergeist is another chapter I don't really agree with. It kind of goes with the old school definition of poltergeist, which is angry ghost. And it's more or less of the variety of what we would think of as an apparition or a ghost, but not so much the psychokinetic human type of poltergeist that a lot of people kind of embrace as the true definition of what poltergeist activity is. It's by the living. It's not so much from ghosts. That's what many parapsychologists feel, and that's what a lot of these ghost investigators also feel nowadays, is that poltergeist activity is created by the living. I know you've heard of that, the teenage girl syndrome thing. Not always the case, but what else did I buy? I want a receipt in here. What did I buy at the time? Oh, Science of Ghosts. Okay, well, Ghost Apparitions of Poltergeists by Brian Rigi, An Exploration of the Supernatural Through History, is this week's book of the week. I'm sure you can – I see there's several copies on Amazon. It's a little bit more expensive than what I paid, $16. I'd get it for a penny from somebody. You're going to pay a lot of shipping and handling. But it's – I think if you're into the history, if you're into the culture of ghosts, which is really important, because once you start to see the culture – where our belief systems came from for certain things about ghosts, from chains rattling in the attic to why do ghosts appear as white sheeted people? Well, there's a reason for that. There's a reason for all that. Where did all that come from? Well, it comes from history and pre-spiritualism times. And this book also does talk about the spiritualism era, which we all know, the Fox sisters and all that stuff in there. And he does try to kind of balance some of the belief systems versus some of the skepticism, but there's really hardly any skepticism here. But then again, you're not really going to sell a book back in 2008 when all these TV shows were really popular. You were just there to sell something that is going to make people pick up a book and want to read about ghosts and believe in ghosts. And it's published by Llewellyn Worldwide, so it's going to have to be a more of a believer type of book than anything. But it is a good read. I got my money's worth out of it, a whole $2. But again, really enjoyed the history of this. And there's a lot of interesting things. I'm trying to remember. That's kind of why I'm dragging this out. There was something about, oh, Santa Claus. That's what I wanted to mention. You probably may not know this, but the reason why you set out cookies and milk for Santa Claus has to do with ghosts. Did you know that? I guess it's an Irish tradition to honor the dead, and it kind of carried over into Christmas for some strange reason. But that's I don't know. That's just kind of how that happened. So the book of the week here. I'm going to talk some events. I actually have some time. This is great. Get to talk about paranormal conferences and conventions. Now, I mentioned a few at the beginning of the show that I'm going to be a part of, one of which the Westerville Public Library, again, October 27th, 6:30 to 8:45 p.m. And I'll also be at the Third Ghost Excavation Conference, which takes place November 4th through the 6th in Bedford, Pennsylvania. Now, it's not your typical paranormal conference. I've mentioned this before. It is more of a conference than a convention. And a convention is kind of like just a bunch of people getting around and showing off who they are and what they do. But a conference is more of getting down to methodologies and talking about the reality of what we do and how can we do it better. What are you doing? And can I steal some of that? And can you maybe help me out with that? Kind of networking kind of thing. And this is what that's about. It's a serious conference of those involved with conducting unique aspects in ghost research beyond just, you know, what you see on TV and YouTube and all those things, but subjective tools. Now, I've created the E4 method, which is a method of client-based ghost investigation. I don't think too many people are really doing the client stuff anymore. I think most people have kind of backed off of that and are just enjoying the prisons and the the prisons and the hospitals and all those things, which are great, but you're really kind of limited, believe it or not. Even though it's fun to go to those places, you're missing the human experience. You're missing the third party. And that's what the E4 method is all about. It's about somebody being the catalyst for you instead of you having to be in the middle of your experiment. And I'll hopefully have time I'm off next week. I'll probably try to wedge the E4 method in here a little bit more and kind of talk about it a little bit in case you've never heard about it, kind of explain what it is and how it works with client-centered ghosts. But the best thing is, come down and see me November 4th through the 6th. I'll be speaking on the 6th on Sunday morning, I think at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's going to be fun after a night of ghost excavation with John Sable, which he's going to want to stay up late. I know how John is. So also speaking is Robert Brad Bradley, Kelly Weaver, John Weaver, friend and colleague Brandon Masullo will also be talking about his methodology, The Ingredients for a Ghostly Experience. You don't want to miss that. I've had a little sneak preview of his work, and I'm really impressed with that. So really worth coming on down. Jonathan Williams, who's another brilliant young man, extensive law enforcement background, forensics background, will also be speaking. And author Patty Wilson, she's also presenting. She's up after me on Sunday morning. So hopefully she brings some people to the crowd. That's going to be fun. Again, ghost excavation is kind of the thing with John Sable. And I've said this last week, I got to get one of his books. That's it. Definitely the next book of the week will be one of John Sable's books. I got to mention him on here. And let's see, talk about the Alien Con. you talk about, man, there's really not that much left here. The end of the year, I've heard a lot of stuff coming for 2017. Some of it I'm not even allowed to talk about yet. People are asking whether or not I can cover some certain events. I'm excited about this. 2017 is going to be a fantastic year for conferences and conventions. Now, we got the SuperCon. That's October 28th through the 30th in Erie, Pennsylvania. And, of course, I also mentioned that's UFO stuff. The Alien Con coming up that same weekend. And we're going to be talking about that here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting. So keep it here. The end of the month, October 28th through the 30th, is Alien Con 2016. We're going to have some of that information, live interviews here on WCJV. You're not going to want to miss this unique opportunity to hear about behind the scenes at a convention. And yeah, you can check out thealiencon.com for more information about the Alien Con 2016. And I got to have more than that. Good grief. The Transformational Shift Conference, that takes place this weekend, Tucson, Arizona, October 21st to the 23rd. A Paraween Mass UFO Fest, October 22nd, Salem, Massachusetts. The 2016 New Mexico UFO Conference, October 27th, Rio Rancho, New Mexico. And the pair of MUFON events coming up at the one of them at the end of this month, the MUFON Philadelphia Area UFO Conference, October 28th and 29th in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. And the MUFON Pittsburgh Area UFO Conference, November 19th, Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And, I've mentioned this before. Always make sure you're checking out MUFON.com. MUFON.com. A lot of states have their own websites for their state. Now, some states have directors that work over multiple states. I can't tell you what or which, but I visited a lot of state sites. And the state sites, a lot of states, not all states, even states that have websites, may or may not have their own conventions. And these are a great way to meet up with a lot of people in the UFO field, especially those in MUFON. And I recommend being a MUFON member. That way you can get privy information to a lot of the stuff that's going on with MUFON. And MUFON is going to get some pretty good press coming up, but they're expanding. They just changed their logo. They're really going to be going after membership. Now, personally, I'd rather go after quality than quantity, but they're going to try to get a lot of people involved with MUFON. And hopefully when you get a lot of people, you're going to get a lot of good people at the same time. So excited about that. Excited about what MUFON is going to be doing next year. And cryptozoology events, the 5th annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo this weekend, October 21st and the 22nd in Chautauqua, New York. Sasquatch Summit, November 18th through the 19th in Ocean Shores, Washington. And I really enjoy having time at the end of the show. Usually I have so much to talk about. I usually neglect these sites. I'm not going to lie. I don't. I run out of time. But I really want to make sure that I mention these conferences, especially this time of the year when the days are dwindling, the events are dwindling. And a lot of people are out there planning for next year, because I hear from a lot of these people that put on these events probably a few times a week. Somebody somewhere who's promoting something needs information. They may not just want to get on the website, which you can if you email me, let me know, insider@paranewsinsider.com, or go to the website, paranewsinsider.com, and click on the about/contact link at the top. And as I always say, just follow my legs, and right there is the link there. And you can contact me, and I'll get your conference convention put up there. If you have a paranormal class or tour, or a guided hunt, I also put those on there. Now, I don't put everything on there. I kind of shy away from certain things like scare cons, horror, gaming, anime-based kind of things. So I kind of pick and choose. It's my website. I can do it if I want. But don't be afraid. Just give me the information. I'll see what I can do. I'll get it on here. A lot of people, you'd be surprised at who's actually looked at this website and who has looked at some of these events. Some big name people use my website, which is awful cool. And I'm going to continue doing this. I don't get paid to do this website. I pay a lot of money for all this stuff. So I'm doing it as a service for you guys out there to give back to the paranormal community. It's kind of my little unity way of bringing people together the best I can, because these events are important. And I say this all the time. It's a good way to network. It's a good way to learn stuff. It's a good way to meet people. And there's a lot of nice, great young minds coming up and through the ranks. And it kind of brings a tear to my eye, because it kind of signals that, you know, my time is near in this field and somebody's going to be filling my shoes and doing stuff. And that's great, because there's a lot of great people out there, open-minded people that are going to be taking over pretty soon. So I highly recommend, if you've never been to one of these things, conferences, conventions, use this as kind of a guide. If you have a question, just ask me. I've answered a lot of people's questions, people about writing books, or they want to do psychic things at conferences and conventions, or they have goods that they want to sell. You know, a lot of questions like that. I've been to a lot of these events and sold quite a few books, so I can kind of help you out. That's what I'm here for, here to guide and here to help. So again, Paranews Insider, click on the About/Contact event at the top. And again, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, let me know. Insider@ParanewsInsider.com. Find a link on the Facebook or the Facebook page, Twitter, Google+, Pinterest. You know, I don't want to go too far with social media. I think Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, that's enough. Too much is too inundating. And I don't want people to have to worry about where to contact me. But I know everybody has their own thing that you like. A lot of people hang out on Twitter. A lot of people hang out on Facebook, but not the same people. So if you want to get a hold of me, those are different methods of getting a hold of me. And I'm going to miss you guys next week. I'm going to take a little time off. Take my Halloween vacation next week. It's what you got to do. It's called the silly season for a reason. And having interviews and having events like this coming up for me with Westerville, it does take a little out of you. And it'd be good to get a little rest. So I will be back on November 1st, Tuesday. My goodness, is November already? Good grief. Well, maybe I'll do something for Halloween that week. 2 weeks from tonight, I will return. I promise you, I'll be back. And I hate to miss another week, but gosh, I need it. I need to get ready for these presentations here. So that being said, again, thank you everybody in the chat room and listening live, even if you're not in the chat room. I appreciate you, and I still appreciate you if you're listening to this as an archive. I really appreciate everybody out there who's been listening to the show. It does mean a lot, and it keeps me going week in, week out, and to do all the research that I do behind the scenes. So big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for producing the show and doing one heck of a job running this network. To Dita for, you know, whatever you do. I don't know what you do. Corral people in the chat room. No, she does a fantastic job. And Paul, also for helping out with a lot of the stuff and keeping Dita in line too. That's a tough job. That's a full-time job in and of itself. So keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, and the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.